This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, January 19, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll look at the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Farmers Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, South Korea says it will now discuss its beef impasse with the U.S. Also, Indiana Senator Evan Bayh has introduced legislation that he says will make the U.S. less dependent on foreign oil. And Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin speaks out on agricultural disaster assistance. We'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Steve Hilberg will give us the lowdown on Midwestern agricultural weather. It's all on the Friday version of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, March wheat, 489 and a quarter, down 5 3/4. May, 499, down 3 1/2. At the Chicago Board of Trade, March wheat, 467, down 4. May, 480, down 4. July, 486 and a quarter, down 3 1/4. March corn, 406 3/4, down 5 1/2. May, 418, down 4. July, 424 1/4, down 3 3/4. December, 390 3/4, down 3/4. March beans, 717 3/4, up 1 1/2. May, 732 1/2, up 1 1/4. July, 746 1/2, up 1 1/4. November, 769 1/4, up 1 3/4. March soybean meal, 209.30, down $2. March soybean oil, 29.30, up 48. At the Merck, January feeders, 95, down 27 1/2. February live cattle, 91.05, down 135. February lean hogs, 61.57 1/2, down 22 1/2 on the day. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the markets is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin with the Informa numbers this morning. What were they, and what did the trade do with them?
Well, the corn number came in at 85.6 million planted, Dave, and using a 155 yield and about just under a 12 billion bushel demand for next year, you're probably going to come in around a 1 billion bushel carryover. For the beans, we came in at 70.88 million planted, using a 43 bushel yield and about a 3.05 demand base. You're probably looking at just under a 500 million bushel carryover. And you know, to us, that kind of encapsulated the trade. It was a lot of two-sided. It was a lot of spread play, whether it was the bean oil and the meal or whether it was the front-end corn against the D's. It seemed like traders were just doing their thing today and not really in any way meaningful to the market as a whole, whether it be technicals or fundamentals, that they feel pretty evened up and pretty good about where they stand. I think one thing that we did notice as towards the end of the day came, D's corn firmed up. That surprised us a little bit just because we felt like, well, now that the Informa numbers are out and the word on the street in Chicago by our contacts is that we've gotten our 8 million, we've gotten our 9 million additional corn acres one way or another, so we probably should have gotten the price we needed for D's corn and have attained that level of acreage. Do we need to take it any higher now unless the front end leads it higher? So we'll watch that, especially going into next week, because we certainly don't want the carry to come back into the corn market given these fundamentals we have after today.
What I came away with from the Informa numbers was an idea that wheat acres may not be ripped out.
That's exactly right, and I think that I didn't go through the numbers right down to the T, but it seems to us that Informa is still using about a 217 to 218 million total corn, beans, and all wheat planted acreage base. That could be lower by USDA, and that could be higher from USDA based upon whether they want to choose to utilize any of the CRP in their number cajoling or not. So there's still a lot of uncertainty, you know, in the probably the 2 to 4 week time span. But the shorter term, it seemed like to us, based upon both talk up in Chicago and conversations, and then also the price action, the traders feel pretty secure where they're at right now.
March wheat on the week, an improvement of 10.5, while the D's falls off 3.75 for the week. What does that imply to you, that they're going in opposite directions now?
Well, I think it goes back to the weather. You know, we had real good exports today, first week and several that we beat estimates by a big amount, and so that helped us in the front-end mindset. But the July and on further wheat markets, the Kansas-Nebraska wheat belt is going to get another pretty significant snow rain event here this weekend, and their crop has definitely turned the corner, and it goes back to your earlier point. You're not going to rip up a lot of wheat, and so do you need to really be long in the July and these contracts right now if you're a trader? No, probably most of the excitement is going to be in that front-end market because of the world stocks and the fact there's not a lot of Chinese wheat, Australian wheat, Argentine wheat out there to be had the next 2 to 3 months.
What do we make of the charts? March corn now sitting on a bubble, essentially, and pretty much an inside day, call it an inside day from yesterday. What does that imply coming back next week?
Well, again, it goes back to those spreads and that carrying charge. Mm-hmm. We think that the March corn is probably going to be the weak link versus the May or July, and that goes back to the fundamentals, that the pipeline supplies of cash are pretty adequate right now, and that the funds are fairly long right now, the index funds and the commodity trading funds, and we don't have a lot of information coming from the USDA until another full month and a half from now. So we may see an issue where the March and May futures are led a little bit lower by the cash basis, and that's what will be our main driver here, we think, in the front end. But July, as you get closer to May, June, July, commercials and elevators realize that 900 million bushels of corn under loan is going to stay under loan, especially if you don't have another price spike to the upside. So the pipeline is going to get tight, and then the acreage and the USDA start talking there in March.
Turn your attention to the soybeans. March finishing the week at 717.75, up 11.75 on the week. The Novis are up 5.75 on the week. You look at these charts, it looks to me like we're really putting a pennant formation in here.
They're really trying to, and it's a real frustrating market right now because the November longer-term charts are extremely overbought right now, and yet the front-end charts look fairly constructive. On the day as a whole, Dave, I guess we weren't real thrilled with the close given some of this fundamental supportive news. Soy oil had a good day, but the meal looked like it took the sell side of the spread, and that kind of took some of the price action to the upside off the bean market. Maybe the biggest issue out there with the beans right now is if the December corn market feels like it's got its needs met as far as acres, do we need to go any higher in November? And maybe that's why the chart is looking that way in November versus a relatively tight market right now in the front end. We were very surprised. We talked to folks in central Illinois all the way over to western towards Springfield and Jacksonville area today, and they noted quite a bit of basis improvement in their nearby bean demand. We looked at the crush margins. They're not terrific. They're in that 60-65 cent range. Not bad, but not super terrific. And it doesn't seem like there's any meal crushers that are really short-bought and need to get some meal crushed and get some beans bought up here shortly. But yet the meal basis stays very, very firm right here. So there's something going on. We don't know whether it's South American weather, but it sure smells like fundamentally the front end and between the fundamentals and the technicals, the front end we have to respect right now. But we think those November bean charts look a little iffy right now.
Probably soybean oil also picking up some support from crude, which is up today.
We'd like to think that. You know, the natural gas showed a real nice bottoming price action here. The gas market was able to help out the crude oil market. It was interesting. Lead month crude on a weekly basis hit directly onto its 200-week moving average, mm-hmm. was able to find some support off of that. That's going to be one of the number one things we watch next week is did we put in a technical 200-week moving average bottom there, and then can we get a 4 to 6 to maybe even $10 rally off of crude oil going into the next 2 or 3 weeks?
We spent some time already on the wheat on the fundamental side. Let's look at the technical side of it, where it appears after a nice day yesterday where we tested and actually blew through both the 100- and 20-day moving averages, we really backed off of that and we're almost, well, we're almost back down in now what is an 11 or 12 week downtrend.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, again, the weekly wheat chart looks decent. It doesn't look as good as it did last week, but it looks decent. And the biggest thing that we've been watching is on the composite July chart. And, you know, that's one of the things about the electronic and side-by-side trading that we're going to have our folks talk about in Chicago, from Chicago, at our West Lafayette meeting tomorrow morning, is that what chart do you use? What moving average do you use now? You've got a day trade, you've got an electronic trade, an overnight trade, a composite trade. So, but getting back to the composite trade on the July chart daily, you're bouncing on that 50-day moving average, and I think we hit that 5 or 6 out of the last 6 days in a row now. You can kind of tell by that wheat market that there's something to give here, whether the market finds lift and support off of corn and beans or falls on its own fundamentals. That 50-day moving average we're taking pretty seriously right now, Dave.
Give us a little hint of what we might hear tomorrow morning at that meeting regarding these charts. Which charts are the best to look at, and does it depend on the commodity?
Well, it does depend on the commodity, in it, because that depends on the liquidity, where it seems like the electronic markets for the grains, the first 2 or 3 contract months are the ones that really garner most of the liquidity. And so if you're looking at a front-end chart, we're probably going to use the composite or the electronic. If you go to the back-end markets, we're probably going to stick with the day trade. But the biggest issue we have right now is when we went limit up on the day before the report, the electronic shut down, and then again it goes back to what are some of these issues? There, you know, how long are they going to let this go, that we have all these different charts we have to look at and try and handle the technicals as we try to do?
Certainly need some new products, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Dave.
All right, then. So what do we come away with the day at the end of the day with for producers?
Well, market's pretty satisfied right now. It seems pretty sure of itself. There's not a lot of new information. We'll probably turn our attention back to the outside markets and see what the dollar, the crude oil, and the bond markets do next week. They're in a very interesting technical mindset as well, and we're going to touch on that tomorrow morning as well. So as a whole, we want to get a little bit more new crop corn gone because we do think we bought some acres here. We want to get a little bit more new crop beans gone because we think that the beans, and the new crop especially, have been drug up by that Dease corn.
And again, when and where the meeting?
Well, we're going to have that at the University Inn in West Lafayette. Registration's at 8:30 Eastern time. It's free of charge, and there's a lunch included.
Thank you much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave, and have a great weekend, sir.
Nice job
on the road this weekend.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight, he says in northern Indiana becoming mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers, elsewhere clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from near zero in northwestern Illinois to around 25 in the far south. Then tomorrow, mostly sunny early, then clouds increasing from the west during the afternoon, highs ranging from 20 in northwestern Illinois to 38 in the far south. Then tomorrow with your ag supplement, winds diminishing early and remaining under 10 miles per hour through the day. Minimum relative humidity levels ranging from around 40% near the Ohio River to up to 75% near the Mississippi in northwestern Illinois. In agricultural news, South Korea says it is now ready to talk with the U.S. over the beef dispute between the two countries. Earlier this week, a group of 11 U.S. senators spoke to South Korea's ambassador to the U.S. The message was that South Korea's zero-tolerance requirement on bone chips was putting at risk the possibility of reaching a free trade deal. An official at South Korea's agriculture ministry says the nation is ready to talk regarding inspection procedures and technical issues. Previously, South Korean officials said they saw no connection between free trade negotiations and U.S. beef imports. Meanwhile, a confidential government report leaked yesterday in a South Korean newspaper says the free trade negotiators have given up on attempts to get the U.S. to soften its anti-dumping laws. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says fruit losses in California give credence to the idea that it's time to focus on agricultural disaster relief on a national policy level and not on individual situations.
Well, I sure hope so, and I sure hope that we recognize that disasters like this have to be borne by the entire country. The citrus producers, now we have cattle ranchers in Colorado, Kansas, and Nebraska. They've been hit hard. I think they've lost a lot of livestock. Then we've had a drought in other parts of the country. So again, my position on disaster is that it should not be taken just out of the agriculture bill. This ought to be borne by all the people of our country.
When it comes to ag-related disasters, Harkin says assistance comes at a price to the industry. He says that has not been the case for other national disasters.
The same way as when, you know, when a hurricane hit, when Katrina hits Louisiana and we pour all that money into Louisiana, we don't say, okay, we're going to give you that money, but now we're going to take it out of your highway money. We're going to take it out of other federal monies that go to your state. We've never done that before. 2003 was the first time ever that we paid for a disaster program by taking the money out of agriculture, and they took it out of conservation. It's kind of ridiculous to take it out of conservation to pay for a disaster. Well, the reason you have conservation is to hope to protect from disasters. So 2003 was a bad departure, and I hope we can get back to where when we have these kind of disasters that we as a society pay for them, and we don't try to take it out of one state or take it out of one sector like agriculture, for example.
Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin. A survey released this week by the Illinois Corn Growers Association found the state's corn producers generally favor a revenue-based farm program over the current farm program. ICGA says nearly 3 out of every 5 respondents believe the federal financial safety net should be changed from the current yield and price format to one based on revenue. A U.S.-based pro-biotech group says producers worldwide planted 252 million acres of biotech crops in 22 countries in 2006. The group, the International Service for the Acquisition of Agribiotech Applications, says that represents a 13% increase over 2005. U.S. farmers continue to be the world's largest planters of biotech crops, with 135 million acres in 2006. Brazil had a 22% growth rate in biotech plantings last year. Brazilian farmers planted almost 28.5 million acres of biotech crops. Mexico yesterday raised its quota for duty-free corn to 750,000 metric tons as part of a series of measures to stem tortilla price increases. That's 100,000 metric tons more than originally announced a week ago. Indiana Senator Evan Bayh has reintroduced legislation that he says will reduce the nation's dependence on foreign oil by providing tax credits for manufacturers who develop more fuel-efficient vehicles.
Our energy challenge will be one of the defining issues of our generation and will determine our prosperity, our national security, and our freedom. It's also going to define the kind of world our children will inherit from us. We need to bring a sense of urgency to meeting this energy challenge. And I believe that we can.
The bill would also lift the cap on the number of tax incentives available to consumers who purchase fuel-efficient vehicles, and it would encourage production of biofuels and alternative fuels research.
Number one, increased conservation. Number two, diversifying our fuel sources, particularly in the area of biofuels. Number three, substantial investments in technology that can transform our energy sources into ways that will not only free us from oil imports, but deal with the global warming challenge as well.
Bayh says 22 senators have signed on to the bill. Bayh originally introduced the measure in November of 2005. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson has created 2 new subcommittees to consider legislation on energy and organic agriculture. The additions will give new stature to those areas of production, and published reports say it is likely that each area will get more money and attention in the 2007 Farm Bill. The president of Cargill Canada says hog producers need to respond to a series of trends, including increased competition and consumer demand. Len Penner, speaking at the Canadian Pork Seminar, says Canada should expect greater competition from South America, Asia, and Eastern Europe as the flow of production changes. Penner says that pork producers must also be aware of changes in consumer trends, notably a greater demand for healthy and environmentally friendly products. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
We know managing your farm operation is time-consuming, and sometimes you miss hearing our agricultural programming. But now you can get AM 580 Ag delivered daily directly to your computer. You'll never miss a broadcast of the opening and closing market reports and Commodity Week again. Subscribing is easy. We've put instructions on our website at WILLAG.org. Look on our homepage for Subscribe to AM 580 Podcasts. It's quick and easy, and you'll always be informed with timely market analysis. Drop by our website today, WILLAG.org. Bruce Bostert of the Ludlow Co-op is not available this afternoon, but we have Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing to talk about cash grain. Good afternoon to you there, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
You were at the two meetings this week, the only analyst that was at both the meeting and Pontiac and Olney.
Mm-hmm.
What can you take away by going to both meetings that maybe an analyst wouldn't have done, picked up if they were just at the one?
Well, I guess a couple of things that I saw. One of the things that was kind of interesting that we don't see up in our area here last night at Olney, I mean, the farmers are, there's some concern down in at least some of that area about the wet conditions that they had to take the crop out last fall and, you know, getting the ground back to get ready for planting here. I mean, they probably need, talking with a few guys after the meeting last night, they probably need a couple extra weeks there above normal to you know, get rid of the ruts and get the ground ready to go so they can plant.
Hmm. I came away that looks like they're not going to tear out a lot of wheat.
No, I got that impression too from the meeting last night and the one up in Livingston County. I was probably a little bit surprised that maybe there wasn't as much, not as many as I thought said they were going to increase corn acres.
All right, then. Let's turn our attention to bases. Have you had a busy week?
Yeah, it's been, bases-wise, it's been kind of quiet the last couple of days here. I've had a busy week just on calls and things like that, but from a cash movement standpoint, today was really about as quiet a day as we've had in the last couple of weeks, I'd say, here. Not a lot of grain moving and really not a lot of activity on the basis levels. Pretty quiet. A little bit of strength maybe in some areas on the corn market, but really not a lot going on.
I suppose producers on the soybean side looking for $7 or better cash?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the magic number. And we did, you know, we have hit that in a few places here, or gotten close enough for most guys. Same thing on the corn side, you know, the $4 level is kind of definitely a magic number there. You don't get that very often. And we've hit it in a few places. We've hit it for March in a few places, but the majority of the areas, I'd say, we haven't got to that level yet.
Your prices today?
I don't have them in front of me, but I think it would be $3.78 on the cash corn and $6.80 on the beans.
Thank you much, Bill.
Okay.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Motorola CEO Ed Zander says the cell phone maker will cut 3,500 jobs as it moves to improve operating costs after a disappointing fourth quarter. Zander says the move will save about $400 million over 2 years. The cuts from Motorola's workforce of about 70,000 are to be spread across the company and will be complete by the first half of 2007. Motorola has a research facility in Champaign. A special census began today in Champaign. Census takers are knocking on doors to measure any increase in the city's population since the 2000 census. City officials say the city has grown, especially in the Northwest. Any population growth measured in the census will translate into increased state tax revenue for Champaign, which will be used for fire, police, and street service. An Illinois Supreme Court ruling today says the University of Illinois must include campus parking as a bargaining issue when it negotiates with employee unions. The High Court reversed an appellate court ruling and sided with two unions that wanted to negotiate such things as parking fees for employees. Senator Barack Obama says ethics and lobbying reform legislation passed by the Senate last night is an enormous step toward restoring the people's faith in government. Obama worked with fellow Democratic Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin to help lead the fight for passage. The Indiana General Assembly is considering changes in the way county coroners do their job in the wake of a mix-up last year that left a Taylor University student misidentified for weeks. One bill would study whether counties should have appointed medical examiners. Oprah Winfrey is the richest woman in show business. With $1.5 billion fortune, the Chicago-based talk show Titan took the number one spot on Forbes.com's list of the 20 richest women in entertainment. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg, director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Looks like we're finally in line for something that starts with an S.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty late this year. It's not the latest we've ever seen our first inch of snow here in east central Illinois, but it's pretty late as things normally go. Looks like we got a system coming out of Texas and the southern plains this weekend that'll come up through the Ohio Valley and probably drop a broad swath of snow from all the way from Missouri through Illinois, Indiana, and into Ohio, and probably as far north as Iowa and southern Wisconsin. So this will probably be the first substantial snowfall, at least for eastern Illinois. Of course, you had the big storm out in the west earlier in December, and much of Illinois and Indiana will probably see some of their first significant snow of the season so far.
Define significant.
Well, a couple of inches, considering we've only had about a half inch here in Champaign-Urbana all season. Anything that accumulates very much would probably be significant, but I think we'll probably see in general about a 2 to 4 inch area of snow, and there will be some higher amounts where we get some better dynamics and some higher snow output. So there'll probably be some slow going and travel as far by Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon.
Heavier snow on the other side of the Mississippi?
Possibly. Actually, northwest of here, the storm track looks like it'll go through western Kentucky and on east-northeastward. Some of the heavier snow might actually be from central Missouri up into west-central Illinois. But if the storm track changes a little bit, it could move a little bit further north or a little further south. So we'll have to see.
What about the remainder of the two-week outlook?
It looks pretty cold. I don't think we're going to see the mild weather that we enjoyed the first half of, much of December and the first half of January. It looks fairly cold for the next week to 10 days, and we'll probably see some of the coldest weather of the season coming up here in the next few weeks.
That would indicate lows in the single digits?
Oh, that's possible, especially if we lay some snow down and we get a couple clear nights. That will not be out of the question, and in fact, below zero, if some of the models pan out with the cold air outbreaks, would not be out of the question later on down the line.
We've been having a mild winter thus far, but I guess Mother Nature is catching up to us.
Yep. Mother Nature does have a habit of balancing things out eventually, and it looks like it would be interesting to see, because I think very likely we could see a January near normal after the very warm start.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Okay, Dave.
Steve Hilberg, director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week, our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. This is Dave Dickey.